thought it would be a good idea to speak about Tu B'Shvat from a perspective that I'm sure, pretty sure, that you won't hear it somewhere else. There is a machlokes in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah when exactly the world was created. Rabbi Elazar says the world was created in Tishrei, and Rabbi Yehoshua says the world was created in Nisan. Tosfos says, Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim chayim, can be that one holds Tishrei and one holds Nisan, and either the world was created in Tishrei or Nisan, and one is wrong. We know when Chazal argue, they're both right. Both emes. Says Tosfos, the world was created b'machshava in Tishrei and l'maisa b'nisan. That doesn't mean that the world was created two times. One time God thought about creating it, and 6 months later he actually did it. What it means, I think, is the following. Chazal say, Bitchila ola b'machshava livraros b'midas hadin. Ulevesof shiteif imo rachamim. Originally, when God planned the creation of the world, he planned to create it b'midas hadin. Total justice, judgment, no mercy. And in the end, he added mercy. Let's discuss that for a second, what that means. Ideally, this world should have been created totally with justice, because that's the purpose of this world. In a nutshell, God, being the ultimate good, wanted to shower that goodness on a creation that could receive that good, which is himself. That's what we call Olam Haba. Tzadikim yoshvim vatroseim b'rosheim v'nehenem izi v'ashchina. The tzadikim bask in the presence, of God. That is the world to come. That's eternity. And that's what God really should have done. Showered his goodness on human beings, on this creation, that could get a relationship with him, which is our souls. But knowing that goodness that is given, undeserved, unearned, is not appreciated. So the Rabbanu Shem created this world. And he put the neshama in this world that the neshama could earn that reward, could create that reward. At a different time, we spoke about this at great length here, and there must be a tape around somewhere, so if you want more details, you can listen to that tape. But basically, the purpose of this world is that people should earn that reward. And therefore, the more they earn it on their own, and the less help they get, the less mercy there is, the more it's earned. The more help, the more it defeats the purpose of this world. Because if God had wanted to give it to us unearned, he could have done that without creating this world. So, b'tchila ola b'machshava li'baros b'midas hadin. Originally, God's plan was that this world should be created a world of total justice. You get what you deserve. And if you earn it, it's all yours. No help. But then he saw that many people, if not most people, couldn't survive like that. It's not that they would earn their reward, they'd lose it. So therefore, he added mercy that people should have help. As far as say, that it's not that God changed his mind, but that God created the world on two dimensions. He created a world of din, and then he created another dimension where there's rachamim also. For those individuals in history that could exist only on din, who could do enough that they could earn their reward and not lose it without any help, those people live in the dimension of din. Amongst those special individuals, Yaakov Avinu, Rabbi Akiva, were individuals who could live with total justice, no mercy. And that is ideal, like we said. Because then whatever you have in the world to come, you got no freebies. Nothing is no help. Less help, it's all yours, the more appreciated. For the rest of us, the world exists on din and rachamim. Better to get help and get something than if you don't get help to lose everything. The Shaloh HaKadosh says, that's exactly what God answered the Malachim. When Rabbi Akiva's flesh was being combed by the Romans with iron combs, the Malachim screamed out, Zu Torah v'zu Schara, this is the reward for Torah. And the Rabbanu Shem said to them, Shtok, ki ol, kach also b'machshava lefonai. This is what came in thought before me. So most people learn. It means, the Rabbanu Shem says, look, this is in my mind. You can't understand it. Right? The terrible punishments that Rabbi Akiva suffered, that's something that only God can understand. Kach also b'machshava lefonai. Shalom HaKadosh says, no, it means something different. Kach also b'machshava, b'tchilo also b'machshava liboros levinus adin. Originally God said this was the plan. There should be total justice. So that will mean that if a person does anything wrong, there'll be no mercy, and he'll have to be punished 100% for every little thing. But the 99% that he did right, he'll be rewarded totally for what he did. That was Rabbi Akiva. Ein Adam Tzadik Boretz Asher Yaseh Tov Lo Yechta. So Rabbi Akiva had to be punished for the small things he did. Without mercy, that punishment is awesome in this world. But that left him 100% earned reward for the next world. So the world wasn't created at two different times. It was created B'machshava B'tishrei, meaning Tishrei represents the dimension of Din. That's Rosh Hashanah, Yom Hadin, Yemei Hadin. And it was created, Lamaisa, on a different dimension of Rachamim. That's called Nisan. Nisan is the Rosh Hashanah of Pesach. Pesach, the Targum says, is Chos. The Rebbeinu Shem had Rachamim. He had Rachmanis. So, originally, the world was created not in time. Time is a creation. When God created the world, He created a dimension called the dimension of Tishrei, which is Din. That's the Olam HaMachshava. And He created a dimension of Maisa, that's called the Olam of Rachamim. When the world took on time, so the time zone, the dimension of Din, took over the time zone of Tishrei, and the dimension of Rachamim took over the time zone of Nisan. But originally, the creation was one creation, one time. Before time existed, there was a dimension of Din. That's the what Tosus calls, the Olam was created b'machshava, and there was the Olam of Rachamim. That's what Tosus calls Lamaisa. The truth is that the world wasn't created neither in Tishrei nor in Nisan. If the world was created in Tishrei, it means that man was created on the first day of Tishrei. Similarly, if the world was created in Nisan, it means that man was created the first day of Nisan. So when these two dimensions took on the aspect of time, the creation of man was on the first day of Tishrei or the first day of Nisan, which means the creation of the world itself was 6 days earlier, on the 25th day of Elul or the 25th day of Adar. Svarim bring down that if you subtract 40 days from Chaf Hei Elul, you get Tesvav Av, the 15th day of Av. And if you subtract 40 days from the 25th day of Adar, you get Tu B'Shvat. These are two significant days in the Jewish calendar, the 15th day of Av and the 15th day of Shvat. And they are 40 days before the creation of Tishrei, and 40 days before the creation of Nisan. Tu B'Shvat is 40 days before the creation of Nisan. Tu B'Av is 40 days before the creation of Tishrei. What's significant about that? The Gemara says, Arboim Yom, Kodem Yetziras Avlat, 40 days before a person is conceived, a bas kol goes out, right, and not before he's conceived, but from conception till the 40 days that a person is formed, a bas kol goes out, bas ploni leploni, soda leploni leploni, all the preparations for what a person will be is prepared in the 40 days. Kodem Yetziras Havlad. Similarly, say the Sfarim, before the world was created, 40 days earlier, the Ribbono Shel Olam already began to prepare the creation of the world. And every year, the preparation for the creation of Tishrei takes place from the 15th day of Av, and the preparation for the creation of Nisan takes place from the 15th day of Shvat. So the 15th day of Shvat and the 15th day of Av are the preparation for the creation of the world on these two dimensions. The preparation for the dimension of Din is Tu B'Av, and the preparation for the dimension of mercy, of Rachamim, is Tu B'Shvat. Okay. Ad Kan, pretty much what I saw in the Sefer. Now, not to blame that Sefer for my enhancement, now is enhancement. Even though this idea of the two dimensions also I didn't see anywhere, so take it with a grain of salt, but it sounds to me that that's what Tosus means. The world was created, the machshava b'maisa fits in very nice with this medrash that all of the machshava and l'maisa shitifim olach rachamim. Okay, in any case, there's another similarity between Tu B'Av and Tu B'Shvat. They both have to do with trees. Only very, very different kinds of trees. According to the Gemara in Bava Basra, there are two, and Tainus also, there are many explanations of why we celebrate Tu B'Av. One of them is because that's the day they stopped cutting wood for the Mizbeach. It was a siyum. All summer they would cut wood to use to burn the sacrifices on the altar. And the last day, which is a siyum, finish a mitzvah, you make a siyum. So the siyum of cutting wood for the altar for that year was Tu B'Av. Why? Because from Tu B'Av on, the rays of the sun waned, nights started getting longer, and the day shorter. And as long as the sun was at its zenith, its strength was at its strongest during the summer, it dried up the sap from the trees, and worms would not form within the tree. Wormy wood was unfit to be used for burning the sacrifices. Once the sun's rays started to wane, and the sap began to go back into the trees, then the worms would form. So anything after Tu B'Av, there was a doubt, maybe there was worms in the wood, so they didn't cut wood anymore. It, all during the summer, they cut wood. So Tu B'Av has to do with trees, only cutting them down, dry, sapless trees, cutting them down for the purpose of cutting them up and using them for fire on the altar. Before we describe why that is the preparation for the Rosh Hashanah of Tishrei, which is the Rosh Hashanah of Din, Agav, the Sifrei Kabbalah say that whenever we have an Aleph Beis inverted is a symbol of Din. Whenever the Aleph Beis is in its right order, that's a symbol of Rachamim. Tishrei is Din. Tav, Shin, Resh, the Aleph Beis backwards. In the Torah, Nisan is called Chodesh Ha'aviv, Aleph Beis, Aleph Beis. So Aviv is the month of Rachamim, and Tishrei is the month of Din. Before we describe how cutting wood for the Mizbeach, cutting trees, right, represents the preparation for Yemei HaDin, let's discuss first trees. Tree is called an Eitz. Eitz refers not to the fruit-bearing quality of the tree, but to the configuration of the tree, to the chomer, to the substance of the tree. Proof to that is that Eitzim does not only mean trees, it means lumber. The substance of the tree is called eitz. The configuration of the tree is an eitz. Has nothing to do with the fruit. Dry, dead tree is also an eitz. Krisas eitzim the mizbeach. They cut wood for the mizbeach. They didn't cut the fruit-bearing quality of the tree. They probably only cut non-fruit-bearing fruit-bearing trees. Because you're not allowed to cut down fruit trees. If you have a non-fruit-bearing tree, better to cut that down. So the dry tree, that's what they cut for on Tu B'Av. That's what they finish cutting on Tu B'Av. H is comprised of two letters that, if you think about it, look like trees in their configuration. An ayin and a tzaddik. They both have branches on the top and a bark and root that goes down. And on the top, there's all the little leaves, which are the tagim, the crowns on the letter. If you look at a letter, ayin and tzaddik, as it's written in Sefer Torah, mamash looks like two little trees. Ayin and tzaddik. But if you take that word, ayin tzaddik, and you turn it not into two letters, but two words. Ayin tzaddik. Even though the letter tzaddi is not a tzaddik, it's a tzaddi, but the Gemara says it represents a tzaddik. So you have two words. Ayin tzaddik. Look, ayin means to look. Tzaddi means a tzaddik. Look at the tree and you'll see a tzaddik. Just look at a tree, the configuration of a tree, and you will know what a tzaddik is. How does that work? How does looking at a tree, right? Trees may be great poems, but how does looking at a tree inspire you to see what a tzaddik is? There's a maral in Perek Chelek. The maral says that people are compared to trees. Ha'odom eitz hasodeh. Which in itself is a difficulty, because if you look at the pasuk in the context of most of the Rishonim there, that said b'loshen bitmiya, v'chi ha'odom eitz hasodeh is a tree, a human being, right? Don't cut down trees in a war to make a siege, because are the trees then people or coming against you to fight? Are you fighting the trees? You're fighting people. Don't cut down trees. So it seems from the context of the pasuk, just the opposite. Are trees then people? Meaning that trees and people have no connection. And yet Chazal learned from that pasuk, that there is a connection between people and trees. Just one short shot maybe in that. It says that, Tosfos says, that when the Gemara says, Atem kruyim adam, the ein ha'akum kruyim adam, you're called Adam in Tanakh, but the Goyim aren't called Adam. Tosfos says that's only Adam. But Ha-Adam applies even to Goyim. On the surface, that would be just the opposite. Ha-Adam with Hey-Hayadiyah should apply to Jews. Ha-Adam, they are the man. Adam-San, that applies to Goyim too. Why does Tosfos say just the opposite? Adam is only Jews. Ha-Adam is even Goyim. He's thinking that Tzlach in his Hakdama to the Sefer says that Adam has two meanings. The most popular meaning, the most obvious meaning, is Adama. We come from the earth. The less obvious meaning is Adameh. We can be like God. Adameh, I will be like. I will Adameh lokeh. Man has two qualities. He comes from the earth like the animal. He's a physical being, but he has the ability to be like God. Goyim only have the obvious meaning of Adam. Ha-Adam. Of Adam. Ha-Adam. The obvious meaning of Adam. They come from the Adam. They're a physical being. But Jews have both meanings of Adam. Adama and Adamah. So there's Stam Adam. Stam Adam is the one with both meanings. Ha-Adam is the one with the one meaning, predominantly. So therefore, when the pasuk says, V'chi Ha-Adam Eitz HaSodeh, we're fighting Goyim. You don't fight Jews. Do you think that Adam is compared to an H? No, but Adam is. Adam is compared to an H, but not Adam. Now let's see how. How? By looking at a tree. All you have to do is look at the tree, and you'll see a tzaddik. How does it work? So the maral says like this. What's the connection between people and trees? The truth is that people look like trees. We have limbs. branches, and we have a root. There's only one predominant, very striking difference between a person and a tree. One of us is upside down. Because if we would really look like a tree, we should be standing on our head with our arms and legs extended, and then you look like a tree. Now, if you ever got the part in a play of being a tree, right, so usually you stood like this with your hands up in the air, but it would be much better if you stood on your head. That's the bark. Then the arms up and the legs up, and you look like a tree. So we are an upside-down tree. What does that tell me? Look at a tree, and you see that the branches are up and the root is down. And which is the most important part of the tree? The root, not the branches. Because you can cut off the branches and the tree will still live. You can't cut off the root and make the tree live. So if you look at a tree, you understand the branches are the secondary importance and the root is the main importance. The root is rooted in the place where the tree is kavua and the branches spread out. Now look at a human being. L'chora, we should be on our heads, rooted in the ground, with our limbs up like a tree. No. Human beings aren't rooted in the ground. You know where we're rooted? We're rooted in the heavens. Our root is spiritual. And these are our branches. So because we're in a physical world, we look inverted, but we're not inverted. Our root is in the spiritual world, and our branches are in the physical world. So we're upside down compared to a physical tree. That's what the Maharal says. So it comes out, Ayin Tzadik. Look at the tree, you'll see a tzadik. A tzadik is a person who is rooted in the spiritual world, understands that's where his root is, and the limbs are what give him the ability to stand and function in the physical world, but they're only limbs, they're not roots. It would stand to reason from that, that if we would be in a spiritual world, Vitaka would be upside down. We would be on our heads and our feet in the air. And I found a medrash that says exactly that. Exactly. Medrash says like this. It's a medrash in Paneach Roza in Parshas Chayisora. Paneach Roza is a collection of medrashim by the Balei Atosfos. He says over there in Paneach Roza the following. He says that the first time Rivka Imenu saw Yitzchak, she was on a camel, and Yitzchak was walking in the Soda, and something happened that was traumatic that she fell off the camel. And she covered her head with the shawl, and she fell off the camel. Says the Paneach Roza, what was so traumatic that made Rivka fall off the camel? Said like this, after the Akedah, Yitzchak's neshama fled him by the Akedah out of fright. He died. He actually died. And the Rabbanu Shalom was Mechayim Esim. Says another Medrashim, that's why we say Mechayim Esim. The angel said at that moment, Mechayim Esim, the bracha we make. That's the bracha of Yitzchak Avinu, Mechayim Esim. And in order to recuperate, the Rabbanu Shalom put him into Gan Eden for 2 years. 2 years or 3 years, I remember now. 2 or 3 years, put him into Gan Eden to recuperate after Tchias HaMeisim. The moment that he emanated from three years he was in Gan Eden, because Rivka was 3 years old after the Akedah. 3 years he was in Gan Eden. The moment that he came out of Gan Eden was the moment that Rivka saw him. And the Medrash says, Uki Yadua, and is well known, that in Gan Eden, everybody walks on their head. And Yitzchak had not yet gotten on his feet. And when Rivka saw him, he was walking on his head. And when she saw her chassan for the first time walking on his head, it was a very traumatic thing. I want to say, no, it's not that. She wanted to get on her head too. She wanted to be like him. Good wife. Right? Husband walking ahead, she'll walk on her head too. We'll see later in a few minutes why she covered her head. But in any case, so that says, Medrash says Beferish, that in Gan Eden is well known, right, that everybody walks on their head. I saw in a sefer, I don't remember where, but one of the Mefarshim says that when the Gemara in Bava Basra says that when one of the Amoroyim was clinically dead, he died, he fainted, and he saw the upper world. So he described it as Elyonim Lamata, V'Tachtonim Lamala. So Tosfos gives a few different pshat in what that means, I saw in a sefer that it means this idea, that in the upper world, in the spiritual world, elyonim lamata, the head is down and the feet are up. Because there we have the configuration of a regular tree. Our root is down in the spiritual and our limbs are up. But in this world, Rashi says in Devarim, hayakum asher beraglehem, that's them emolno shaladam, shemayim idosol araglav. Money, material things are called yakum asher beraglehem because they put you on your feet. A deeper pshat is, without the material world, you wouldn't be standing on your feet because your feet are only your limbs. You'd be standing on your head. But since we live in a materialistic world, that puts us on our feet in order that our root should be rooted in shamayim. That also explains why when we want to assume a spiritual posture, we take off our shoes and we cover our head. Because then it makes it clear that the head is the root and the feet are the limb and not the opposite. Because you could be fooled. We walk around on our feet, you could think that your feet are your root. And we're rooted in the physical world. So you have to really think, no, we're not that our feet are the root. Our head is the root. And the hair is the root hairs of the head. And it's all rooted in shamayim. And we're standing on our limbs because we're in a physical world. We're upside down. How do you accentuate and make clear that that's the case? Whenever we want to assume a spiritual posture in the Beis HaMikdash, when Yom Kippur, we take off our shoes and we cover our head. Why? Because in a tree, the limbs are exposed and the root is covered. So if the root would be our feet, that's what should be covered. And the head should be exposed, if that's the limb. But the truth is no. Your head is your root, and that's covered. That's we cover our head. And the limbs are exposed. Take off your shoes. Whatever is a makom kodesh, a velus, we want to empathize with the neshama, have a kesher with the neshama. We want to be more spiritual. Whenever you want to be more spiritual, you cover your head and you uncover your shoes. And therefore, it could be Rivka also covered her head for the same reason, in order to show this is the root. She understood from Yitzchak coming out of Gan Eden, standing on his head, that the head is the root. If the head's the root, you have to cover it. So she covered her head with her shawl. It also explains the Gemara in Chagiga. The Gemara says, Mayofu po'amayich bana olim bas nadiv. The Gemara explains that pasuk, how beautiful are your footsteps in your shoes, the daughter of the benevolent one. The Gemara says, what does it mean? Mayofu po'amayich, how beautiful are your footsteps when you come aliyah l'regel, when you come up to Yerushalayim three times a year, bana olim in your shoes. Bas Nadi, the daughter of Avram Avinu, who was Reish Legerim, who was the first convert. What's going on? Beautiful, your shoes, daughter of the convert. What's going on? Like this. Normally, shoes are a sign of materialism. Wearing shoes. Shasali Kol Tzarki, all the material needs of the world are represented by the shoe. Man has dominion over the animal. You wear leather shoes, says the Vilna Gaon, shows your dominion over the animal world, which is the, under that is all the other worlds, the vegetable, mineral worlds. So it shows dominion over the physical world. That's your shoes. Shoes are a physical thing. In fact, by Yibum, right, the brother could not identify with the soul of his departed brother because he's too Megushim, he's too Gashmias. So he take off his shoe. He couldn't take it off. We take it off for him. So the shoe represents Gashmias. Normally, your footsteps are beautiful when you take off the Gashmias. When you relieve yourself of the Gashmias and you cover your head and you become more of a spiritual person. But Yontif is not like that. Because Yontif, the Gashmias becomes a mitzvah. Eating and drinking is a mitzvah on Yontif. Simchas Yontif. So, mayofu pa'amayich ba'ne olim. When are your footsteps beautiful in your shoes? With the materialism. When you come aliyah l'regel. That's what it means. Aliyah l'regel. You are uplifting your foot. The foot represents the physical side of man. But on Yom Tov, the physical side becomes spiritual. That's Aliyah L'Regel. You're uplifting the feet, the physical. Where do we get the power to take the physical and change it into spiritual? Bas Nodiv, from Avraham Avinu. He converted. He took the body of a goy and changed it into the most spiritual thing that can be, a Jew. So we have the power also to take physical things and change them into spiritual things. But Lemaisa, bottom line, we are like a tree, except we're inverted, in order to show that our root is rooted in the spiritual, not in the physical. So now we understand. Ayin Tzadik, you look at that tree. See where the root is, see where the limbs are. Look at a human being, see where his root is, and see where his limbs are. And you'll understand what a tzaddik is. A tzaddik is a person who's rooted in the spiritual world and whose physicality is only the limbs. It's only the secondary thing. It's not his main thing. That's Ayin Tzadik. In order to be zoche badin, in order to be able to merit injustice without any mercy, the only way is to hand yourself totally over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to totally subdue yourself and submit yourself and subjugate yourself, and not to say, I demand justice, I am zoche, I will merit injustice, but to say, Rabbanu Shalom, I know that I can't possibly merit you, but I trust you. To hand yourself over, that's what we do on Tu B'Av. We take the eights, which represents the tzaddik, and we cut it into pieces. And we throw it into the fire of the altar, which represents total subjugation to God, through fire, through din. And that's how you prepare for the Rosh Hashanah of Tishrei. By totally subduing, subjugating yourself, right? Total hachnah, submission, and throw it into the fire of din, and then you become one with the Rabbanu Shalom. But the Rabbanu Shalom wants us not just to submit ourselves and be subdued. He wants us to be productive. He wants us to be dynamic. He wants us to produce fruit. So he gave us a Rosh Hashanah of Rachamim, of mercy, where he helps us. Pesach is the Rosh Hashanah of Klal Yisrael, where we can achieve, we can do, we can produce our fruit with God's help. So there also we have to do with fruit. Tu Bishvat is the Rosh Hashanah le'ilonos. Different thing. Eight, we said, has to do with the chomer, the substance of the tree, the configuration of the tree. Ilon is a word that has to do with fruit trees, because Rosh Hashanah le'ilonos means that the halachos that have to do with the various fruits take place on Tu B'Shvat. Tu B'Shvat is the line of demarcation for many of the halachos that have dates that are important to them. Whether it was this year's or last year's or whatever, what is significant for fruit is Tu B'Shvat. So we're dealing with fruit trees. And even though Chazal say there are ilonei srak, ilonos that don't bear fruit, there's another Gemara that says, lo asid lavo, call ilonei srak, yotziu peres. Potentially they're fruit trees. In this world they don't bear fruit, but they're ilonos. They're fruit-bearing trees, potentially. Because all the ilonos will eventually bear fruit. Even the ilonei srak. That's why they're called ilonei srak. It doesn't say that all etzim will bear fruit. There are trees that won't bear fruit. But anything that's called an ilon, even an ilon srak, will, what's it called, one day bear fruit. So ilonos is also an idea of trees, but here we're more honing in on the fruit-bearing quality of the tree, not on the substance and the configuration of the tree. Let me tell you something interesting that I discovered one day driving and thinking about this, about an elon. Take the word elon, okay? If you have paper, it's easier to see if you see it on paper. Separate the aleph. Just write the aleph separate. Okay, you have the aleph from elon on the side. Now, the next three letters of Elon is Yud, Lamed, Nun. Add them up. What is Yud, Lamed, Nun equal? Yud is 10, Lamed is 30, is 40, and Nun is 50, is 90. What letter is 90? Tzadik. Now, take the Yud, Lamed, Nun, convert them into that Tzadik, put it back to, next to the Aleph. What do you have? Eights with an Aleph. So Elon is also an eight, but it's not an eight with an ayin. It's an eitz with an aleph. Elon is aleph tzaddik. Now, like we said, by eitz with an ayin, ayin tzaddik means look and you'll see a tzaddik. Just look at the configuration of a tree, you'll see a tzaddik, like we explained. So what does aleph tzaddik mean? Aleph means to learn. Learn about the tree, and you also see a tzaddik. Here, we're not looking at the tree. You learn about the idea of fruit, and you'll also see a tzaddik. When it comes to the substance and configuration, it's enough just to look at the substance and configuration of the tree, and you'll see a tzaddik. But when it comes to the fruit-bearing quality of the tree, there you have to learn. Learn about the tree, and you'll see a tzaddik. Aleph tzaddik. What's there to learn? What does fruit teach us about a tzaddik? There's two very difficult midrashim that I think have the same meaning. One midrash says like this: V'chisavo el aretz natatem kol eitz ma'achol. When you come to Eretz Israel, the Torah says, plant fruit trees. Says the midrash: Ma'ani lo asakti ela v'netias eitzim v'tchilas habriya af atem lo ta'asku ela v'netias eitzim. When I created the world, said God, my first thing was to plant trees. He made Gan Eden, he planted trees. So when you come to Eretz Israel, be like me, plant trees. Now I understand that we're supposed to emulate God, because God is merciful, we're supposed to be merciful. God is gracious, we're supposed to be. But God plants trees, therefore we should plant trees? God does a lot of things. He makes it rain. We should walk around with a watering can and, right, be like God, right? God makes the wind blow. We should all go around, what's it called, blowing out of our mouth, what's it called, air? To be like God? It's absurd. Right? What's this have to do? God plants trees, you should plant trees. Fruit trees. I planted fruit trees, you plant fruit trees. There's another medrash, equally difficult. Medrash says that before Avraham Avinu was commanded to go to Eretz Israel, so he took a pilot trip, and he went on his own. He was traveling around the world to find a place where, if he would have children, where they would live, where he would settle. He came to Aram Naharaim in Chutz Laretz, outside of Eretz Israel, Aram Naharaim, and he saw people eating, drinking, partying, and he said, Rabbana Shalom, please, I don't want this place for my children. This is not the place I want my children to grow up. Not this land. He came to Eretz Israel, and he saw people plowing, planting, harvesting. He said, ah, this is the place I want. Now, on the surface, you have to really understand what impressed Avraham Avinu here. In Chutz Laretz, he saw a bunch of Ovdei Avodah Zarah, a bunch of idol worshippers, eating, drinking, and partying. That he didn't like. Eretz Israel, he saw a bunch of idol worshippers planting, plowing, and harvesting. And that he liked. Why? They're both a bunch of idol worshippers. What difference in what they were doing? Right? So for the JNF, or for the kibbutz movement, this is a great medrash. You see that Avraham Avinu wanted the Jewish people to be farmers, to be involved in agriculture. The truth is, we have Shlosh Esrei Ikarim, but it's spelled with an ayin and a kuf, not an aleph and a chaf, right? We don't have the 13 farmers of Judaism, right? We have the 13 principles of Judaism. And I live on a moshav, so I have nothing against agriculture or farmers, but that's not like the goal of Yiddishkeit. Right? To be a farmer. So what did Avraham Avinu see that impressed him? Ah, Eretz Israel, bunch of goyim farming the land. That's what I want. And Chutzor, a bunch of goyim eating and drinking. That I don't want. Tell you what I think it means. There are two divergent philosophies of life. And again, we spoke about this in great detail, I think, one year before Rosh Hashanah and Elul. So there's a tape about that too. Not going to go into detail. Here I'm going to mention something we didn't mention then. Just the idea. One philosophy of life, which is a secular philosophy of life, is eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Immediate gratification. Live it up. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy. That's what it says on Coca-Cola. Yeah, enjoy. That's it. It's a tzivui. Stop. The immediate gratification. I want it now. I want to enjoy myself now. Then there's another philosophy of life. Philosophy of life of putting in effort now for a future goal. Obviously, the Torah view of life is the second one. Hayom lasosam. This is the world where you put in effort. Umachar lekabel scharim. tomorrow you reap the benefits, tomorrow meaning in Olam Haba. So there are two kinds of people. There are people who are interested in immediate gratification. There are people who are interested in putting in effort now for a future goal. The Torah's view of life fits much better with the second than the first. And that's why Yaakov and Esav represent these two divergent philosophies of life. According to the Poshup Shat and the Psukim, the way many Mefarshim learn, Yaakov was a farmer, was a shepherd, and Esav was a hunter. What's the difference between a hunter and a shepherd? A shepherd is willing to put in work now with an animal that he can't get anything out of for a future benefit. Whereas a hunter doesn't want to know from the animal when he can't get anything from it. He wants to go into the forest, kill the animal, ready-made, and eat it. Finished. He wants to benefit from the animal, immediate gratification. Whereas the shepherd is willing to put work into that animal to raise it until he can get a benefit from it. So Yaakov Avinu represented the Ekev, Ahoya, Ekev Tishmaun, what will be in the end. Now you put in the effort. Later you'll get the reward. And Esav represented also, everything finished, right now. Right now, immediate gratification. When the Rebbe Moshe created the world, what did he do? What symbolized his creation? He planted fruit trees. The Meiri says, Olam Haba hu ha-pri shel Olam Hazeh. Olam Haba is the fruit of this world. Here you plant the tree. Here you plow, you fertilize. And there you reap the fruit. So when God created the world, what did he do? He planted trees. He represented the fact this world is only a preparation. It's a prozdor. Here's the place where you plant the trees, the fruit you eat later. You too, when you come to Eretz Yisrael, remember that Eretz Yisrael is conducive for that kind of life. Plant the trees. Understand that the fruit's not going to come for many, many years. That's what Avraham Avinu saw. He saw the chutz laretz. The atmosphere, the environment is conducive to the first philosophy. Eat, drink, and be merry. Everybody's partying. And that's the Metzias. Right? In Chutz Laretz, the environment is very conducive to that kind of life. On the other hand, in Eretz Yisrael, the land is conducive even for Goyim, even for idol worshippers. But what were they involved in? Planting, plowing, putting in work now for a future. Their future was not too far down the road. But it was conducive for the philosophy of putting in for this world, for much farther down the world, in the next world. So Avraham Avinu said, this is the place that's conducive for the kind of philosophy I want my children to have. Chutz Laretz not. That doesn't mean that you can't live in Chutz Laretz a nice Torah life. You can. But you have to fight against the environmental influence. And it doesn't mean you can't live a non-Torah life in Eretz Yisrael. Plenty of people do. But you have to fight against the environmental influence here. Here, the fight is to live not a Torah life. There, the fight is to live a Torah life. Just to point it out, I remember one year I left Eretz Yisrael in the midst of the Shavua HaSefer. Any of you who have been here more than a year know that once a year they have a book week. And I remember going to Gan HaPa'amon many years ago. That's when they had it. And seeing, not just people looking at Sfarim, there were books. Okay, there were books there that maybe shouldn't have been there altogether, or shouldn't have been altogether also. But Lamaisa, bunch of Israelis, not just religious people, secular people, walking around, spending hours with their family, looking at books. It's impressive. Impressive. And then I went to America. At the same exact time, in Javits Convention Hall, there was a kosher food fair. Same thing. I didn't go, but I heard from somebody who was there. They had all the new kosher products that you could imagine or not even imagine. Buffalo hot dogs or whatever. Which the truth is, I bought and tasted because the Gemara says that lost lover, you're going to get to give a din for everything in this world you could have enjoyed and didn't. So I wanted to say it tastes like a regular hot dogs. There was also deer hot dogs and who knows what. Only didn't see any moose hot dogs. But in any case, and here, thousands of Jews walking around tables looking at food. That's the difference between Chutz Laretz and Eretz Yisrael. Here, Jews walk around looking at books, and there they walk around looking at food. In any case, so the basic idea, Aleph Tzaddik, you learn about fruit, you'll know what a tzaddik is. Learn about the whole concept of putting in work now for a future fruit. That's the kind of lifestyle a Jew has to live. But it goes more than that. Now that you got the Aleph and the Tzaddik, let's take the Tzaddik apart and make it back to Elon. Aleph, Yud, Lamed, Nun. When it comes to fruit, the Torah in Eretz Yisrael gives us four mitzvahs to encourage us to think about fruit in the proper way. To understand that fruit represents this concept of not immediate gratification, but of enjoying the future fruits of Olam Haba. There are four basic categories of mitzvahs that deal with fruit. The first category is called the reishis. Bikurim, truma, challah. You take the first dough, first fruits, first of the grain, and you dedicate it to HaKadosh Baruch. The first sets the pattern for everything that comes afterwards. So you take the first and you say, I understand that the fruit is holy. The fruit represents a concept of future reward for present work. So I dedicate the first fruits to God. Make them holy. And then I'll understand that all the fruits that follow also are holy. They may not be totally dedicated to God, but I'm going to use them in a holy way. So that's the first. Then there's another mitzvah. Maaser Rishon. First Maaser. Tenth. I dedicate a tenth, first tenth, to what's it called, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why the tenth? Because the tenth represents the culmination, the siyum. Ten is the number that takes all the individual things and makes them into one unit, unites them all into one ten. And that's why after ten, in Hebrew, there's no new number. It's achadisre, shteimisre. The ten remains as a unit, and you build onto it. 1 + 10, 2 + 10. In Arabic numerals, 10 is 1 10 and 0 1s. It's a unit. That's why a minyan is 10. It's the, all the many different things converge into one unit in 10. So 10 people is one unit of 10s. In any case, so we have the mitzvah to give maaser, maaser rishon. Give the first maaser. That will, you understand, the first is holy and the goal is holy. Then we have a second mitzvah, maaser sheni. Third mitzvah. Maaser Sheni, second Maaser. What do you do with the second Maaser? The first 2 years of the Shemitah cycle. Yeah, thank you. Cycle. That's it. So you give, you bring your second tithe up to Yerushalayim and eat it there. What's the purpose of that? So Torah says the purpose. Laman tilmad leyiras Hashem Elokecha. In order you learn how to fear God. How do you learn how to fear God? By bringing your Maaser up to Yerushalayim. Tosfos says, in Yerushalayim were all the yeshivas, Kohanim, Leviim. You had to eat your Maaser in Yerushalayim. You usually couldn't do it in one day. So what people did is, they left their children in Yerushalayim to eat their Maaser, and they went and learned yeshivas. And they saw the Kohanim, they saw the Leviim. So a Maaser, they learned how to fear God. So the purpose of the second Maaser is to learn how to fear the Ribbono Shel Olam. And then there's a third Maaser. In the third and sixth year of the cycle, instead of Maaser Sheni, you give Maaser Oni. You give the tithe to the poor. What's the reason, what's the purpose of that? It's not enough for you to realize that this world is a place to put in effort for a future goal of the fruits of Olam Haba. And to do that by taking off the first and the tenth, and by learning about it. But you have to make sure that everybody does that. You have a chiyuv to makar of other people too. To teach them, to give them this lesson. So the Ani, the person who doesn't have on his own, give him, let him benefit from this also. So that's Maaser Ani. Let's take the letters that would represent these four mitzvahs. The first, Reishis, is obviously Aleph. The tenth is obviously Yud. The second Maaser, what's the purpose of it? Laman Tilmad, Limud, which was Limud, Lamed. And the Ani, the Gemara says, the Nun represents Nefila, people who can't support themselves. And that's why David HaMelech didn't put a Nun in Ashrei, and instead, Somech Hashem L'chol HaNoflim. Right away, he supported the people who couldn't fall. That's why the central letter in Ani is a Nun, because he's a Nofil. He can't support himself. So what would be the letter that would represent Maaser Ani, supporting people who fall? Nun. Let's go back. Aleph, Yud,
Lamed Nun, Elon. Those are the letters that spell Elon. The Elon is an Aleph Tzaddik. You learn about it, you'll see the Tzaddik. Learn about the concept of fruit, you'll know what a Tzaddik is. And then go back and look at the letters separately, and you'll see all the mitzvahs that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us with fruit in Eretz Yisrael. The first, the tenth, the limud of Maaser Sheni, the nun of Maaser Ani. Those are the four mitzvahs that deal with fruit that spell the word Elon. So on Tu B'Shvat, it's the opposite of Tu B'Av. Instead of being involved in the configuration, the dry wood of the tree, we're involved in the tree in its fruit-bearing quality, which also teaches me about its tzaddik, which teaches me how to be dynamic, productive. But what is the ikkar of that? What happens on Tu B'Shvat? The sap starts going back into the tree. Tu B'Av is when the sap is totally out of the tree. And Tu B'Shvat is when the sap starts going back. And the sap comes from what? From the rainfall of that year. And ein mayim el Torah. If you want to be dynamic, if you want to be productive, if you want to bring out your fruits that represent this concept of tzaddik, of being able to put in hard work in this world and reap the fruit in the next world, it all starts with Torah. The more Torah you learn, the more dynamic you can be, the more fruits you can produce, and the more that those fruits will be the kinds of fruits that will be palatable, luscious, delicious fruits. So, Mirtz Hashem, if we prepare for Tu B'Shvat, and on Tu B'Shvat prepare for the Rosh Hashanah of Nisan, the Rosh Hashanah of Rachamim, the Rosh Hashanah when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us help, aid, mercy, to be able to be dynamic and to produce our fruits through Limud HaTorah, and then through Maaseh HaMitzvahs and Maaseh HaChesed, we'll be able to bring out the most delectable fruits that will be the fruits that we will have eternally also in this world. Gam HaKeren Kayemes Lola Olam HaKadosh.